Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Church Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now in a moment, I'll be joined by my co-host, Mike Neff, to break down a frantic weekend of racing at the historic Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Kevin Harvick dominated Sunday's Brickyard 400, though there were a couple scary incidents with Brad Keselowski and Landon Castle specifically taking the biggest hits. We'll discuss everything, including Jimmy Johnson missing the playoffs for the first time. And there was a wild Xfinity race on Saturday that saw Kyle Busch win, holding off Justin Allgaier on a late race restart. On Tuesday, it was announced that Paul Menard will be retiring at the end of the year, and Matt DiBenedetto will be jumping into the number 21 Wood Brothers car. Neff and I will chat about that move for Matty D. Over the weekend in Indy, I sat down with Kyle Larson to discuss his 2019, how Kurt Busch has elevated Chip Ganassi racing, and how much clean air matters on dirt racing and so much more. Larson's gotten really good with the media over the years, and this conversation was truly a lot of fun. But first, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Church Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those 5-star ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk Indy with Neff. All right, Neff, wild weekend of racing at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Kevin Harvick came out the victor on Sunday. Pretty entertaining race, I thought. You had, you know, obviously Harvick dominated, but you had the playoff battle, which was intriguing throughout the day. But Kevin Harvick gets his third win in the past 7 races, Neff, and that team is hitting on all 8 cylinders heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They have peaked at the right time. There's nothing better than being on a winning streak and in an uptick in momentum as you're headed into the playoffs. Obviously, Harvick knows what to do in the playoffs, being a former champion. And we've talked about it all season. And Stuart Haas obviously didn't have the success they did last year, but it was just going to be a matter of time before they kind of figured out what was necessary to get over the hump. And the Ford team has definitely done that.
For sure. I think I said this stat on the podcast last week. If not, I was mentioning it to one of our colleagues. But this is Harvick's, at the time, was 24th. Now 25th win at Stuart Haas Racing. The next highest driver is Kurt Busch. I believe he has 6 in that same time frame since 2014. So Harvick's obviously the leader at Stuart Haas. He's made the championship 4 out of the past 5 years. We'll get to, you know, playoff predictions here in a little bit. But I don't know, he's peaking at the right time, like you said, and, you know, it wouldn't be surprising if he made it to Homestead and, you know, possibly become a 2-time champion.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it in the past with Harvick. He's got the skill. Roddy Childers knows what he's doing, and that pit crew knows what they're doing. It's just a matter of them not shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, I can't even imagine how many wins he would have if they hadn't stepped on themselves over the last, you know, 6 or 8 years. I mean, they have been in position to win races and had pit road speeding penalties, loose lug nuts, whatever it was, bite them. I mean, it's probably another 30 or 40 times.
Yeah.
To where he could be at almost Jimmy Johnson level in wins right now. So it'll be interesting. And again, I think right now, you know, it's tough to pick favorites when we go into this thing, but they are absolutely on the list to make the Final Four.
For sure. And he led 118 of 160 laps on Sunday, so clearly had the dominant car. However, when he did get back in traffic, which was like second place, Ryan Blaney, you know, Ryan Blaney had a good car, and he was disappointed after the race. I spoke with him that the final caution came out and Harvick had already pitted, which Blaney hadn't. I mean, you know, Harvick would be the advantage car in the restart. He'd have the top line, which the only reason Harvick got back in traffic was because he took the inside line on one of the restarts, and throughout the whole weekend, Xfinity Cup, whatever, the top line was the preferred groove, and Harvick, he said it was dirty. I don't know if he meant as in, like, it wasn't clean, or if he actually meant, like, there was, like, dirty racing up there, like, he didn't like it from previous restarts. But overall, Neff, Harvick, I don't think there was really any beating him on Sunday unless, like you said, the 14 made a mistake of their own.
Yeah, I agree. There was intense, great racing throughout the field, and I think NBC did a great job of showing that to us, and I think that was part of why I enjoyed the race so much, was we did get to see all the action back in the pack. But at the front, you know, I felt like Harvick was just a notch above everybody else.
Yeah, and you mentioned how, you know, you think NBC did a great job of, showing, you know, showcasing the entire race. And I agree with you on that. You know, I was obviously at the track, but while watching, whether it was on FanVision or on, you know, on regular NBC, I thought they also did a good job because, you know, they had battles they were watching for like 20 seconds with Ryan Preece and like Daniel Hemric or something. You know, it wasn't just the front runners, but mostly throughout the day, they were showcasing the playoff drivers. Obviously, going into the race, Daniel Suarez, Ryan Newman were tied for the final playoff position. Clint Bowyer was 8 points up, and Jimmy Johnson was 18 points back. Now, if these guys all came to play, ultimately, Jimmy Johnson wrecked out while battling inside the top five. I thought, personally, if he had track position, that 48 car was strong enough to possibly pull off the win, which ultimately, after the first two stages, he was probably going to have to do.
Yeah, he'd had a shot. Again, I think it'd have been really hard to beat the four,
right?
Because they seem to be the fastest car out there. But Johnson was in contention. You know, he moved forward at the beginning of the race. They had a minor misstep at one point in the middle of the race, but he kept himself up in the front, you know, five or six of the pack for most of the race, which is where you have to be to win these things, and. Unfortunately for him, Byron got on the outside of him on that restart, and he didn't have anywhere he could go lower, so he was stuck where he was, and that kind of sucked the air off the spoiler, and around he went, and it's weird. I mean, the first time since the playoffs have been introduced into NASCAR that we're not going to see Jimmy Johnson with a shot, and I feel like that team is doing better than they were early in the year. I think he and Cliff Daniels are really getting along well. I think that we'll probably see them contending for wins. I don't know if he'll get a win, but he'll be contending for wins in the playoffs. And I would not be surprised to see 2020 be another year where he's got a shot at a championship.
Yeah, for sure. Even though they have 8 straight finishes of 15th or worse, which is a career long for Jimmy, and you know his previous career long before this was 5. So 8 straight, pretty bad races, at least bad finishes, is kind of why they're back in points like they were entering this weekend. Yep. So, you know, they've had, and even Jimmy said this going into Indy, they had 25 races to do something, you know, leaving it down to one's kind of unfair. So coming in 18 points out, like I said, going into the final stage, they pretty much had to win. And you saw Jimmy Johnson, and this has been the case for the past month or so, be super aggressive. I think that's what got him in trouble. I think he was a little upset with William Byron after the incident. But ultimately, Jimmy's just being super aggressive. And sometimes stuff like that happens when you have a destination that you have to get to, and that was the checkered flag.
I mean, competition meeting at Hendrick on Tuesday had to be kind of fun. But we've seen this out of Jimmy the last couple of years, though. I think he's really started to figure out that with this package, you have to be super aggressive. And we saw him at Indy last year. I mean, he was basically blowing up, took it to the inside in turn three wide, and lost it. And then saw it at the Roval last year, making that dive bomb move on Truex, and basically losing it, taking both of them out. So it has been a Jimmy that we're not used to seeing, but I think it's a Jimmy we're going to see a lot more of before he quits racing.
And I also agree. I think 2020 is going to be not a breakout year, obviously, because he has 7 championships, but compared to the past, you know, 2.5 years, I think 2020 is going to be quite the year for the 48 team, only because I think Hendrick is improving, even though their finishes may not show it. Obviously, William Byron made the playoffs this year in his second year. Alex Bowman made the playoffs with a win at Chicago. I think Jimmy and Cliff Daniels next year are going to come out hell's a blazing and pick up multiple wins. And Jimmy's obviously, you know, 2020 is a contract year. On the Dale Jr. download this week, he mentioned how he doesn't want to stop racing. He's not satisfied with his career, which is crazy to say because he's arguably the GOAT. In my opinion, he is. And I know, Neff, he's not for you yet or maybe ever. But you say he's top, what, 10? I would say
he's top 5.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any question he's one of the top 5 stock car drivers in history.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously Richard Petty's in the discussion, Dale Earnhardt's in the discussion, David Pearson's in the discussion. But I'm starting to question if he'll make it or not. I was always a firm believer he would get to 100 wins, and now I'm not.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
But at the same time, we've seen him win 8, 10, 12 races in a year before. And it would not surprise me, like you said, they're starting to get it figured out. And if they get it figured out, Jimmy's got the ability to win 10 races in a year. And that happens, we're now at 93. And then 100's not out of the question. It's been surprising to me the last couple of years, the struggles that they've had. We've talked on this podcast before that the move to no ride height really impacted Jimmy Johnson, because that was the thing that they could do better than anybody, was get the car down on the ground and maintain that platform longer than anybody. And now that everybody can do it because it's that way all the time, that took that advantage away from him, and he's still kind of learning it. And he mentioned on the Dale Jr. Download that he loved, I shouldn't say loved, he enjoyed testing with Chad, because that's what gave them the advantage. And, you know, when testing went away, I think that was a problem for them as well. So it's going to be interesting. I feel like we both said, I think 2020 is an important year. I feel like it'll be a rebound year, as you've said. If it's not, I would not be surprised to see it be his last year. But I feel like he's of the opinion right now that they're on the verge, and if they get to that point where they start winning again, it could be another resurgence where we see him go on a run of 2 or 3 years of winning a bunch of races.
And you see, I kind of the opposite. Say 2020, I don't want to get too far into this because we got a lot to talk about, but 2020 is his contract year, right? And as we've seen this week, which we'll talk about this week, you can be let out of contracts early. So say he did sign a contract extension or whatever. But he said this on the download as well. Like, he doesn't want to end his career badly. I'm gonna bring up Tony Stewart, because like the last couple of years of Tony Stewart's career, you know, obviously a lot of incidents happened, whether it's the broken leg or the incident in Canandaigua in 2014. A lot of stuff just happened and piled up, and you know, he really was never the same Tony Stewart, at least in a stock car. But Jimmy Johnson, on the other hand, you know, like I said, I think he's the GOAT. And maybe I'm a little biased only because, you know, unlike Dale Earnhardt and Richard Petty, I've seen Jimmy Johnson's whole career. I've been alive for his whole career. And I can't say the same for Petty or Earnhardt. But I think he's motivated. I think, you know, having all this defeat in, 86 straight races or 85 races now of not winning just motivates him even more. And, yeah, 2020, watch out, because that 48 team's coming. And it'll be interesting to watch and see how he progresses with this new aero package in year two. But, Neff, a lot to talk about, like I said. The two drivers that made it in, Clint Bowyer, Ryan Newman. That's the two last week that I picked on the podcast to make it, and it was a pretty good battle between Newman and Suarez coming down to the end. Suarez was taking no prisoners, and wrecked Matt Tift with, 20 to go or so. He said after the race he was just being aggressive. He had to be aggressive, but that sucks for Matt Tift because he was having a top 20 run all day. And then, you know, Bowyer got in, and he was pretty comfortable all day, but he probably saw Jesus when Alex Bowman spun out with probably, 30 laps to go or so.
He at least saw Elvis. I don't know if he saw Jesus, but he at least saw Elvis. Yeah, that was a moment, to say the least. There's those moments all season long. You know, as you mentioned earlier, you had 25 races coming into this one. You don't want to put it all on this one. But there are those moments throughout the year where you have a chance to be caught up in somebody else's mess, and that can really impact your efforts to get into playoffs. And that one was a big one. Bowman was sideways and kind of heading down. Clint had no chance to go above him, so he had to go below, but he made it below him without making contact, and that absolutely saved his playoff hopes, because if he'd have made contact, it'd have turned him right, he'd have gone in the outside wall, and it would have been over. So I agree that Bowyer kind of stroked it a little bit, I felt like, on Sunday, but he had to. And same thing with Newman. You know, Newman is a great points racer.
Yep.
And we've seen that. When he almost won the championship without winning a race a few years ago, he gets the most out of his car and maybe a position or two more at the end just because he's so hard to pass. And that is enough if you don't have a pile of DNFs to make it through and make it into these playoffs. Now, making it rounds into playoff is a different thing. It'll all depend on if other people have difficulties and how many points Newman can continue to score. But it would not surprise me to see him make, you know, the final 12 for sure and probably the final 8 before he gets booted out.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've been listening to a couple racing podcasts this week, whether it's Door Bumper Clear or NASCAR NBC put out a special with Jeff Burton and Nate Ryan. This playoff field, and we'll dig into this more later, but it's so wide open. You have like Kyle Busch, who has, you know, a ton of playoff points, but then from there on now, it's really pretty tight, at least from 2nd to 5th and then 6th to 16th. Like, it's not that much. This will be an interesting playoffs. So, you mentioned Newman, how he's a good points racer, and yes, he's in a deficit because he doesn't have a single playoff point. It's going to be hard for him to advance because I would say out of the 16 drivers, he's probably the slowest on a weekly basis, but that doesn't always translate to the 16th worst finish, obviously, out of those drivers, because this week he finished 8th in the race and, what, 6th or 7th of playoff drivers. So Newman, like you said, he's a hell of a points racer. It's what he's known for. He's obviously very hard to pass, and everyone's touted that. So are you surprised he got an over Suarezlo? Because ultimately, they came in tied, and then going into the final stage, Newman was 1 point ahead of Suarez, and then, you know, he finishes 4 points ahead because the Suarez ultimately getting caught a lap down late in the race when Kyle Larson spun out, which probably I didn't kill because obviously he came back to finish within 4 points of Newman, but definitely hurt any chance he had of making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think Suarez has got the equipment that's better than Newman, but he doesn't have the experience. And we've mentioned before that I think fans and even teams have gotten spoiled in the last decade at how quickly crew chiefs and drivers have melded. And for years, you would have guys switch to a new team and take, you know, 2 or 3 seasons before they really started being a force. And you know, Suarez is only in his 3rd year, and it's his 1st year at SHR. So you had to kind of cut him a little slack of learning the procedures and his crew chief and all over there. I think that ultimately probably hindered him early in the season, so he was playing catch up from that. But I'm curious to see what next year brings. I mean, I felt like they had a decent year. Yeah, they probably should have made the playoffs, but you know, there's not necessarily rookie mistakes, but inexperienced driver mistakes. It cost them a little bit. The team had a few mistakes during the year. So I'll give them a pass on this one, but I'm curious. Next year, I fully expect Suarez to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I fully expected him to be in the playoffs this year. And I guess maybe that was because I thought Stewart Haas Racing would be stronger than they are, because they had obviously 2 guys on the bubble. And then over the past 2 months or so, Eric Almirola has kind of sunk in the points, down to, what, 13th or 14th. So, I mean, I thought SHR would be, like, if not the top team, like 1A this year. And ultimately, they're probably the third, maybe, I would say third best team, but only because Harvick, if you account for the rest of the organization, they'd probably be the 4th or 5th best team. So, you know, it'll be interesting about Suarez. You mentioned how this was his 3rd full year. In each of those 3 years, now his 3 teammates, whether it was the 2 years with Joe Gibbs Racing or this year, have made the playoffs, and he's not. And you know, I'm a Daniel Suarez fan. I think he's a good racer. Obviously, he beat Eric Jones, Justin Allgaier, Elliott Sadler, straight up in Homestead for the championship in the Xfinity Series 3 years ago now. He got fast tracked to the Cup Series in 2017 when Carl Edwards announced his retirement over the offseason that year. But like, what's your take on Suarez? Because you said you think he'll be in the playoffs next year, but, you know, results matter now, and especially when you have a guy like Cole Custer coming up the ranks in-house at SHR.
Yeah, I mean, there's pressure there, but, again, it's his 3rd year in the sport, and he has consistently gotten better when they've gone back to tracks and improved on finishes, and he's willing to learn, and he's open to learning from his teammates and from his team. I feel like he's a work in progress. And I mean, it wasn't that long ago he really couldn't even speak English.
Right.
He came over himself and took this thing on. And as you said, he went out and won that championship He didn't back into it. It wasn't like everybody else had bad days. He went out and flat out beat him. And I just, the cup level is a different thing. And it takes longer to get better. I mean, talk to Erik Jones, talk to Ryan Blaney. Yeah, they're in the playoffs, and Blaney's had some better finishes now than he has, but he's still not winning the races that we thought he would.
Right.
And it's because it's hard to win races at the cup level. So I feel like Suarez is right about where he should be. He hasn't duplicated what his teammates have done, but, you know, other than Erik Jones getting in with that one win last year, you know, that's the only reason he got into it last year. I feel like Suarez and Jones are pretty equal right now, outside of, you know, Jones has got the couple wins and Suarez doesn't, but as far as just week to week, it seems like they're on a pretty even field.
Interesting. Now, what do you want to talk about next? You want to talk about Bubba?
I think Bubba needs some love.
Ah, for sure. So, you know, we have obviously touted Bubba on this podcast a lot this year. A lot for the bad reasons, though, right? Like, Richard Petty Motorsports struggled with finances. Bubba came out, I think it was at Kansas, 4 months ago now. It's kind of crazy it was that long ago. And spoke about his depression, you know, that he's been facing because he can only do so much and the results aren't there. But now, the result was there on Sunday because third place finish for the 43 team, and they didn't back into that. They were a top, I would say, you know, Corey LaJoy said on his podcast this week, top 5 to 7 car all weekend. They're top 5 in practice on in the first practice on Saturday, top 10 in the second practice, qualified 15th, which is one of their best starting spots of the year. And then, you know, he got an incident on pit road early, the first, you know, lap 11 or whatever, when Suarez hit the wall. And they had to go from the back, had a ton of damage, but drove quickly through the field. And then the last half of the race, they're in the top 10 pretty much the entire race. So that's obviously good to see for that team, which has struggled with finances a lot of this year. But Worldwide Technology has upped their amount total towards that team. And, you know, Bubba got a third place finish out of this. And had something happen there at the end, the whole playoff picture might be a little different.
I agree. You know, they reorganized over there at Richard Petty sometime midsummer, and their results and their cars have just been improving. And I felt like going into this weekend, you know, he was online early on social media touting that this is the best car he's ever run. And the great thing about it is he got the most out of the best car he'd ever run. And that is the key thing. It's one thing to have fast cars. It's another thing to bring them home with a good finish. And that was the cool thing this weekend is he had a car and he went out and got the most out of the car. And I feel like if they can continue doing this, and as you mentioned, Worldwide stepping up, giving them some more financing is definitely helping that whole squad. And when now we just got to kind of wait and see. Let's see if they can continue to take advantage of this. If they see results, will Worldwide continue to step up? Will some other sponsors step forward? I've long maintained that I don't understand why it is so hard to get sponsorship for Bubba. I mean, outside of Chase Elliott, he seems to me to be the most ideal person, spokesperson for your corporation, you know, just pitch man for your product. He has got social media figured out. He has a great personality. He's brash, but he backs it up. He interacts with the fans, the whole football throwing thing, and the goes to the hauler every weekend and signs autographs. I mean, he gets it. He gets the whole package. And I can't understand how a budding star in the sport that has such a following and such a close relationship with the fans cannot, just doesn't have sponsors lining up. And it really confuses me that it's so hard to get him sponsorship.
Yeah, I agree with you. And he's really blunt, but not in a mean way. I was going to say something different, but in a mean...
Yeah, not a jackass kind of way.
Yeah. He's very blunt, and he's very honest with anybody. And, you know, third place is... I mean, that's their first top five on a track for the team, on a track other than Daytona or Talladega Neff in almost 4 years, since Dover 2015, when Erik Almirola finished, I believe it was third or fourth at Dover. It's their best finish on a, you know, on a non-super speedway in over 5 years since Almirola finished third at Bristol in 2014. So, you know, that's a good run. And it has, you know, it's a rare occurrence for the 43 team this year, obviously. But this was a brand new car. And I was talking to Bubba after the race, and I asked, you know, I mentioned that stat to him. And he's like, yeah, you know, ever since Charlotte, which was the Coke 600, you know, almost 4 months ago now, I feel like we've been out of a five-star field, we're about a four stars, and that fifth star has been flashy. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not, but this week it was definitely there, and, you know, it was a five-star race, obviously, to get his only second top five in his career at the Cup level, which is only, you know, almost 2 years deep now. So,
yep.
Big run for that 43 team, probably the best race he's ever run, in my opinion. And you could even throw that, you know, he's won a few truck races. He won a truck race in Lesser Equipment in 2017. But I think from start to finish and kind of the maturity that he showed in this race is probably the best he's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, that win at Michigan was pretty amazing in a really underfunded truck. But at the Cup level, without a doubt, I think this is his best race. And he didn't pull any punches.
No.
I mean, he was aggressive. He made moves when he had a chance to make moves, and I was with you. I was really kind of hoping to see Logano get up there and maybe go a little over his head to try and get by Harvick to win Indy and have both of them get taken out and have Bubba kind of squeak by for one, but it didn't quite work out that way.
He mentioned how he was game planning for that, too. He said back in 2011, I think it was, at Lee Speedway, I'm not 100%, do you know where that is? I'm not 100% sure, certain.
At Lee?
Yeah.
Lee is in New Hampshire.
Got it. So it was, that makes sense, because Eddie McDonald was racing and Ryan Truex was racing. And so they were battling down into turn one, and he gained, you know, Bubba restarted third, just like on Sunday. And he said he game planned for the when they wrecked, and ultimately they wrecked, and Bubba got by and won. So nice. He was game planning. He's like, you know, he saw him getting to turn three, and Logano was still under Harvick, and ultimately then Harvick cleared him, and Bubba was stuck to third. But, yeah, good race for the 43 team. He was blocking the hell out of Ryan Blaney on the final lap. That Ryan Blaney was none too pleased. That, you know, moved him from fourth to seventh. So, like I said, good run for Bubba. But Neff, a couple of big incidents on Sunday. I guess let's first start with the first one being Landon Castle. Now, I don't know the G's on that wreck.
I'd like to.
I would like to as well. But he blew a right front tire coming out of turn one and pounded the wall. I haven't seen a wreck like that, at least an impact like that, in quite some time. And especially the angle that he hit, it's pretty scary. Our former colleague Zach Catanzaretti already took a couple pictures of it, and it was so bad that the roof actually buckled up. And when the roof buckles up, you know that was a pretty big hit.
Yeah, there was no doubt that the when you pancake into the wall like that, yes, the safer barrier takes a lot of the blow away. It would have been really scary to see that on a concrete wall. But still, yeah, I mean, you're going so fast and hitting that flat, you decelerate so quick that the G-forces just had to be ridiculous. And I was amazed. I mean, we all know Landon's ridiculously healthy. I forget what it was. I want to say it was the 600. He ran
a
half marathon or something after running the 600.
To the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I can't even. And Jamie McMurray's the same way. I mean, we saw him at Charlotte a couple years ago when everybody was like falling out of the cars at the end of the race because it was so hot and the carbon monoxide was bad.
Right.
And he himself was taking oxygen on the pit wall after the race. And then he jogged home to Mooresville. You laugh at people that say these guys aren't athletes, and maybe what they do doesn't require the athleticism of a hockey player or, you know, or a basketball player or something, but they still have to be in peak physical shape. And watching these guys take a hit like that and get out of the car and not be limping and not be winded, I'm amazed that he got out of that car and looked completely unfazed.
Yeah, it was funny because I was listening to Sunday Money this week, and obviously Corey LaJoy is the host of that, and he said he texted Landon right after he got out of the car on Sunday and said, "Are you alive?" And obviously Landon was, And then Lana texted back Monday saying that he's speaking fluent Mandarin Chinese. So, yeah, that was a hard impact. And, you know, obviously we're happy to see Landon get out of that and, you know, be okay. So, Neff, only a few laps later, though, even arguably not as big of an impact, but a pretty big impact. Brad Keselowski was racing, well, Eric Jones was racing underneath Brad Keselowski. Jones got loose, and Brad hit the wall a ton and then came down and hit the tire barrier a ton. And the car was pretty much on its side. You know, the visual of it looked terrible. Keselowski having to crawl out of the car, or pretty much flop out of the car. And, yeah, I mean, it led to a red flag, and we'll get into that. That was a pretty big wreck. Haven't seen one like that in a while either, at least with the car tilted up on a tire barrier like that.
Yeah, it's been a flashback to years ago of Matt Kenseth. I believe it was at Dover.
Yeah.
Driving up onto some tires at the end of a pit wall. And, yeah, you don't see that often anymore because we don't really have tire barriers very much anymore. But the way Indy is laid out, that is where the road course spills back onto the speedway at the exit of turn two and runs back around to the start-finish line, you know, the clockwise way. So there's a very straight perpendicular to the racetrack wall that differentiates the spectator mounds on the backstretch and the exit of the road course. And so there needs to be something there so they can't hit that flat wall. And there's technology available, and I'm sure that Indy's going to look into it because they analyze every time something like this happens, every race. They analyze every race, period, to figure out things that they can do better. I know at Daytona there are some temporary safer barriers that get put up where the road course is there, and maybe that's something that'll migrate to Indy. But in all honesty, I feel like the tires at that spot were better than a safer barrier because I feel like the way they had them set about 10 feet off of that wall allowed it to absorb the impact, but they gave enough that the car kind of rode up on top of them, where if it had been a safer barrier, I think it had shot him straight back out into traffic and he'd have risked another impact from another car. So I know his brother Brian was a little pissed off about the idea, kind of wanted to sacrifice some humans on the front stretch, which seemed a bit excessive. I got into it with him a little bit because the Keselowskis are passionate. Let's just go down that road. We saw Bob getting ready to get in a car and go out and run down Carl Edwards when they were running in Xfinity years ago. They pull no punches and they react very quickly. And I think Brian's still mad about the thing, and I'm still bugging him to give me a plan or an idea how to do a better job than the tires did. But in all honesty, where that is, they have to have an opening there for safety vehicles to get out because the next opening is way around in turn one. And so they set that thing up with a gap for the trucks to get out. And I think it's an ideal setup for what that area of the track offers. And we've talked about this before. Anytime you think there's a spot on a racetrack where a vehicle's not going to hit, they're going to hit there. And we've seen it at Richmond. We've seen it at Texas. We've seen it at Vegas.
Pocono.
People find Pocono. People find places to hit where you can't believe a car could even get. And this was one of those things where it happened, and thankfully the tires were there. I'll be curious to see what next year holds. I don't know if they're, like I said, Daytona has some temporary safer barriers that they use. We'll see if they go down that road or if they stick with the tires, because I think the tires did exactly what they should have done.
Yeah, so you hit on a lot there.
It's
going to be hard for me to expand, but I do think the tire saved him as well. Like you said, had there been just a safer barrier, or I mean, that's such a bad angle because it's obviously the exit of the road course. And it was such a bad angle that obviously they needed something there. Just a straight wall is not going to do much. It in fact, do a lot of harm to a driver had they hit it, which Brad would have hit had the tire barriers weren't there. And so I do think the tire barriers saved him. And it kind of, you know, like I said, the visual looked really bad. It kind of engulfed the car. And it was just up and on its side. And, you know, like I said, haven't seen one like that in a while, probably since the Kenseth one. Dover, I think that was in 03 or 04. So it's been a while. And yeah, the Brian Keselowski thing, that was a little much, I think. But I don't know, because Brad, it's interesting because Brad got out of the car and he felt the same way. He said, you know, not about sacrificing the people, but in terms of, like, there shouldn't be, not that there shouldn't be a tire barrier there, but there shouldn't be, like, a wall, an angle in the wall like that, which, you know, we agree. But it was reported, and he mentioned that he talked to Doug Bowles of, you know, the president of IMS, and, you know, back, what, in 2002, Indianapolis Motor Speedway was kind of the standard barrier of getting the safety in auto racing. And, you know, they were the first track to really start it, and Brad thinks there needs to be kind of an uptick, and they need to kind of evaluate where they're at. And, you know, I think every track needs to do that. Newman said that about Watkins Glen a few years ago when that was a big hit with him and McDowell. Jeff Gordon, I think, was in that one. Sam Hornish. It was a big wreck. I do think every track needs to have some kind of protocol. And I just don't know what else Indianapolis can do because it has a road course and it runs races on the road course. So I think, honestly, that was probably the best bet, and it probably saved Brad, you know, even more impact.
No doubt about it. We can't have safer barriers everywhere. No. And years ago, Watkins Glen, when Jimmy went off the end of the first corner, you know, he ran into foam blocks, and we've migrated since then, and we've done away with tire barriers at most places because of safer barriers, but there are some spots, especially dealing with road courses, where we don't have safer barriers. We use gravel traps or whatever, and each situation is unique, and each incident gives us more data about these unique situations. And for now, I think we're okay where we're at. Like I said, I'm curious to see what we'll have next year. But like you said, Indy has been at the forefront of safety innovation, I mean, for a century. And I don't think this will be any different.
Now, Neff, like I said, that led to a long caution, and it led to a red flag after that long caution. So they had like 3 or 4 laps under caution. Then maybe 5. Then they finally throw the red flag. You know, NASCAR officiating's been spotty at times this year, at least in terms of race director. David Hoots retired after, what, the 500, and since then it's been a little inconsistent, I should say. And then later in the race, we had it on lap 97, there's a piece of debris, which was 4 laps prior to the end of the second stage, and they ran the final 10 miles under caution, and then they ran the next 10 miles under caution. So it was a 20-mile caution period. And then this one was a 7, you know, the one that had the red flag. There's a 7 lap caution, so 17.5 miles. Neff, what is going on? Like, why is there so many caution laps? Obviously, under stage breaks, there always are, usually, like, you know, more than usual. But come on.
It complete frustration, brother. I mean, and I bitch about it all the time. There are things that happen that you just know should be an immediate red flag. Anytime somebody has a significant engine failure where you see like a big streak of oil going down the racetrack and you know they're going to have to get out the kitty litter, throw a red flag immediately. Because you know damn good well by the time they get out there, they put it down and rub it in, they suck it up, they blow it off. It's just a bunch of laps. You know it's going to happen, so throw the red. Same thing with a car on top of tires. The minute that car was on top of tires, they should have thrown a red, not even had the cars get back around to that corner. They should have stopped them at the start-finish line, had the pace car come back there and wait for them. And once they got the tires repositioned after the car was drug off of them, do your caution, have 2 laps, go 1 to go, and on the 3rd lap, we're back at it. The other thing that drives me insane is when we have red flags, and then we burn more laps after the red flag.
Right.
There's no excuse for that. You have a red flag. You should have everything done and ready to go so that the moment that red comes in, when you get back to the start-finish line, it is 1 to go and we're going. And the fact that, I mean, I remember, and I want to say it was Richmond, I may be wrong, we had a red flag a year or two ago, and after the red flag, they spent 3 laps getting the lineup right. And I was just, my head was exploding. I'm like, how can you possibly not have the lineup fixed while you were sitting around for 15 minutes under a red flag. There's things that should be automatic. And you and I talked about it a week or so ago about caution flags and that there should be standards for what's a caution and what's not. Same thing with reds. There should be a list, and it's not a big list, so they should be able to put it on a post-it note and have it on the window and say, hey, look, that's one of those five things that's on our red flag list. Throw the red. But instead, we go around and we burn laps under caution, and like you said, and we ended that stage. I was so furious. It was a piece of metal. There was no reason to they should have thrown the caution, had the pace car pick them up in turn one and say, we're going green when we're going one to go when we come back around. And instead, they couldn't get the lineup right, which to this day makes no sense with the current rules package that says, and a caution comes out, we go back to the last loop. Everybody on pit lane has got the loop data on their screens. They know what it was frozen at. They know where they're supposed to be. There's no riding next to people and arguing spots. It's black and white. The fact that they took two laps to get the lineup right at a 2.5 mile track,
yeah, that's the part
that is insane. It's one thing if it's at Martinsville, you know, and your caution lap is like 40 seconds. We're talking, it's 5 minutes to run a caution lap in Indy.
Not that much, but it's at least, close. Yeah, it's probably 3 minutes because if you think about it, they're going what?
You're doing 55 or 60 miles an hour.
Yeah,
and so if you're doing 60, that's 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I agree with you on all of this, you know, and you explained it perfectly. And I'm looking at the caution, the amount of caution laps in this race is unreal. 30% of the race was under caution. 48 of the 160 laps were under the yellow. There was 9 cautions, so that's a little under 5 laps per caution. But you look at some of these caution laps, and yeah, the Keselowski one was frustrating because there's also a red flag. But then you go to lap 90 when Kyle Busch blew up on pit road. That took 6 laps to get his car off pit road. And then they restarted on lap 96, went 1 lap because of the debris. And then 97 to 104, so 8 laps under caution because of a piece of debris and a stage break. So out of 15 laps, 14 of them were under caution. So yep. Say it's 3 minutes to get around Indy, or 3 minutes to get around Indy under a caution break, or under a caution lap, I should say. That's like 25 minutes out of like 27 that are under caution. Unreal. And we saw this in the Indy 500 too, you know, not to bring up that, but I guess I am. They had a 7-lap caution, and that's 17.5 miles where they couldn't get their order straight. And, you know, fans get pissed off about this. Media gets pissed off. I'm sure the drivers get pissed off too, because you're wasting laps. The one at the end of the second stage is really bothersome because there were stage points on the line. And
the playoffs.
And yeah.
I mean, we're at the, you know, and we talked about how they've had 25 races, but still, we're down to where every point's mattering, and you had guys trying to make it into the playoffs or secure their playoff spot who had made a pit stop and taken tires in anticipation of running some laps.
Yeah, Jimmy Johnson. Johnson, Newman. I think Newman finished 12th in that stage. Johnson finished 8th. But then you had guys like Suarez and Boyer that stayed out. So that's a potential swing in playoff stage points that could have led into a shift in the playoffs. Ultimately, I don't think it did because Jimmy wrecked out and Suarez missed the playoffs. But still, I don't know. It does just really bothersome. And we've seen it more times than not this year. And I don't know. It's something that needs to be fixed. So, yeah, really, really irritating. But Neff, we got more to talk about. Let's see. What else do you want to chat about? Because there's a lot that happened in this race. We can move on to the Xfinity Series. That was quite a race. Obviously, Kyle Busch won. Justin Allgaier finished second. Pretty good battle, I thought, coming down to the wire. Allgaier was able to pass Kyle Busch early in the race. And Kyle said after the race he thought that if the race was another 2 laps, that Allgaier would have been the winner. Do you believe Kyle, or do you think he's kind of just spewing a bull of crap?
I think Kyle might be being a little generous there. I think 5 laps, yes. I think that Allgaier's car was better longer on the run, and if he had that many laps, I think he'd figure out a way by. For 2 laps, I think Kyle Busch can hold off just about anybody. I think he's being a little generous. But, yeah, I thought it was a great race. Felt bad for Bell and Reddick, you know, as a racing deal going for it. Bell felt like Reddick might have crowded him a little bit. Depending on which angle you look of the replay, maybe a little. I mean, I didn't think he was excessive about it. It wasn't like he made contact or something. So I think they were racing. And unfortunately for Bell, he got a little loose. When he got loose, he took Reddick with him, and they both hit. And, again, it was another one of those kind of hard hits that made you cringe a little. But at the same time, having cars both in there and kind of bouncing off each other, I think, deflected a little bit of the energy. Safer Barrier did its job, so everybody in the end was okay. First and foremost, I hate having Xfinity at the big track. I will always hate having Xfinity at the big track. But the package that they're running there has produced some pretty good races the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they kind of based this cup, the whole cup package that we have this year off of, was the racing at Indy and, you know, not so much Pocono, because the Pocono Xfinity race last year was pretty bad. But the big aero ducts and, you know, less horsepower, it's made for some good racing at Indy. Obviously, the four-wide finish last year at the end of Stage 1, where John Hunter Nemechek was fifth on the white flag, and he won the stage. Good stuff at Indy. The better stuff happened off the track, I feel like, at Indy, in terms of the Xfinity Series. And you know what I'm talking about. I guess it started on the track. But Mike Harmon was coming to pit road during practice, opening practice for the Xfinity Series, as was Michael Annett. Michael Annett was running in front of Harmon. Harmon came down and ripped the bumper off of Annette's car. Harmon said that the spotter said he was clear. Annette went over to his car and was, according to Harmon, he was like, F this, F that, you know, F you. And then, you know, the two came to grasp and they were fine with each other. Then NBC Sports interviews Annette and he kind of goes off. He had some pretty choice words for Annette, calling him an idiot. Choice words for him, I should say. Called him an idiot, called his whole team an idiot. And you don't have nice things to say about a bunch of idiots. So then later on in the day, Mike Harmon sees that and he had some blunt tweets, Neff. He's the first one. If my family has spent the money on me that yours has spent on you, I would be ashamed to show my face at the racetrack, only winning two races. Back your mouth up, Michael Annett. So, first off, what's your take on that tweet? Is that fair game?
I mean, if it wasn't true, then it wouldn't be fair game. But in all honesty, we know that the money that the Annettes have spent to keep him in race cars and running has been a lot, and he's got two wins. So I don't think there's anything in that tweet that's inaccurate. At the same time, there's a lot of other drivers that are in the same situation. I feel like Annette's gotten better the last couple of years, especially this year. I think he's come further in his career in the last year than he has in a long time. But I mean, let's face it, he's still not Jimmy Johnson, you know, and his family has spent a lot of money on his career, but I don't begrudge him that. It's similar to anybody else whose family's got some money. If their kid wants to go racing, let him go racing. At the same time, it's accurate. He's won two races. So, yeah, I don't really have a problem with it because I think it's 100% true.
Harmon felt like that wasn't enough. He went on to say, he tweeted this out. He goes, I apologize as a team, but you took it to a whole new level when a camera's in your face. Come bring your punk ass down to Applebee's on Crawford Road, which is right outside the racetrack, and call me an idiot to my face, Michael Annett. Neff, I never thought, you know, Applebee's is a place that's known for, there's no place like the neighborhood. This is awesome. Just because, you know.
Maybe they should change it to there's no place like the hood.
Good for Mike Harmon, though, right? Because, you know, for that team, any publicity is good publicity. Because they don't have the employees, they don't have the cars, they don't have the funding, they barely have any funding to keep their team going. And so when Harmon, you know, he's 61 years old, but he's not going to back down from Michael Annett. He's shown that. I saw before the race, right before the race, the Xfinity race on Saturday, Josh Williams, BJ McLeod coming up to Mike Harmon and, you know, like giving him a thumbs up, talking to him about it. So it was all fun for Harmon, and, you know, his social media following doubled from this. I was actually, you know, I was contemplating Friday night, I'm going to dinner at Applebee's or Buffalo Wild Wings. I chose Buffalo Wild Wings. I guess I should have chose Applebee's, because it was only a half mile away. But that would have been amazing. And then the next day they followed it up, and Annette said, looks like I missed a dinner date at the Applebee's or something. So, like I said, any publicity for Harmon's good publicity.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. The reasons Mike Harmon is even known in racing is he tried to kill himself at Bristol in the crossover gate, then he stole Jennifer Jo Cobb's hauler. I mean, that's the two things that he's known for besides being a start and park back marker race car. I mean, and he makes no bones that that's what he does. We all know that's what he does, and we need those people in the sport. So the fact that he stood up at this moment and basically bowed up, I thought was hilarious. And I give him credit. He's like, look, we talked. We had it worked out. Now you're going to go out and disparage me on TV. Let's settle it like men. And apparently, Annette did not show up at the Applebee's, so it didn't get settled. But I thought it was entertaining.
Oh, for sure.
I think it's funny that we're dealing with a backmarker and, as he said, a guy that's won two races, talking smack about each other. But at the same time, more power to him. I mean, like you said, any publicity is good publicity for Mike Harmon and Mike Harmon, and I hope and pray that he gets an Applebee's sponsorship out of the deal.
I would hope that
the Georges would step up and give him at least a race. If nothing else, at Indy next year, Applebee's should be on Harmon's car.
Yeah, and Applebee's did, they said, thank you, Mike, or I saw a tweet, something similar to that. Mike Harmon wasn't done there, moving off the subject.
They sent him a free, $25 gift card or something.
he talked to NASCAR.com and was super blunt. I went up to him and asked him a question, and he said he's going to bust his ass if Annette shows up to him. So, good stuff in Indianapolis. I did not think we were going to be talking about Mike Harmon this week, but I'm kind of glad we are, because that was entertaining. Now, Neff, Tuesday morning it was announced that Paul Menard's retiring. This was a secret pretty well kept, because no one knew about this. Paul Menard was retiring, Matt DiBenedetto going into that car, into the 21 car in 2020. Obviously a big step for Matt, and, you know, 3 weeks ago he didn't have a job for next year, getting kind of kicked to the curb by Levine Family Racing. What's your take on that? Because Menard's is, you know, going to be one of the sponsors for the team.
I think it's awesome.
Yes.
The only thing I'm a little bummed about is it's a one-year deal again. I would love to see Matty get like a 3 or 4 year deal to where he could just race. It's a performance-based sport, and if you don't perform, you're out. But I feel like he's performed enough in the last few years that he deserves a little security, and I would love to have seen them give him a 3 or 4 year deal. But I'm thrilled that he's going to be in cars equal to Brad and Joey. I think he'll win races. And I'm thrilled that Menards is sticking around. I mean, that's, God love John Menard. He has supported racing since I ever first heard about Menards. I mean, I want to say when Crawford was running at Indy with the, like, big block V8s and sitting on pole, or getting, you know, fast times and sitting near the pole, he had that bright green Menards paint scheme, and I didn't know what the heck Menards was, and, you know, went to Wisconsin and found out. And I know that John Menard has got a lot of publicity and a lot of value out of sponsoring and racing, and I think he's going to get a lot more value if he rides into Benedetto Wave.
Yeah, and so a lot of things happened after this. There was a teleconference yesterday, and, you know, at Kentucky, I was at Kentucky, and Bob Pockers asked Paul, because people were asking Bob on Twitter, what Menard's plans were for 2020, and you know, so Bob asked him, Menard said that he has a contract and he plans on being with the team. It turns out, over the summer, obviously that was in July, but over the summer, Paul said that he came to, a grasp with himself that he wanted to spend more time with his family. He has two kids growing up and wants to, you know, be a part of their lives more on a weekly basis. So, you know, can't fault him for that. He's had a decent career, only the one win at the Brickyard. That's a good one to win in 2011. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you know, good for Matty D. Apparently, you know, once Paul came to the Wood Brothers and told him, I think it was Eddie that said, well, who should we put in the car? And Paul said, go get Matt. So, I mean, they're friends, Matt DiBenedetto and Paul Menard, but that's pretty cool. And, you know, after Bristol, I asked, you know, because DiBenedetto finished second, he had all these drivers come up to him after the race, kind of congratulate him, you know, giving him a pat on the back, whatever. And I asked him a question afterwards, like, what's that mean to you? And he said, that's what you need, because they could be your biggest allies, they could be your biggest help in finding a ride. And ultimately, that's what happened, with Menard pretty much stepping out of his seat to allow DiBenedetto to come race for a bigger team, like you said, Penske Equipment, and book it now. I think he's winning Daytona 500 and getting a 100th win for the Wood Brothers.
I know you're on that bandwagon, and I can completely see that. We all know that Matty D's a great plate racer. We've seen the last few years that the Penske cars have been fast at Daytona, so you put a good plate racer in a fast car, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, and who knows, you know, I mean, I know there's team orders and not team orders in this sport, but we saw Stuart Haas do it at Talladega, and it would be impressive to see the Penske boys at Daytona, just the four of them line up and just run away and hide and settle it out at the end among themselves and have Matty D on top. But I think he's going to have a chance to win a bunch of races next year. I think he'll be in contention and running a lot of top tens and top fives. And I think we're really going to see his talent shine through now that he's going to be in equipment that can support it.
I agree. And I think just like last year, I mean, there are going to be growing pains, obviously a new team, but sure. also new equipment and equipment that he's not used to and equipment that he, you know, it's some of the best in the sport. So just like with Ross Chastain last year, when he went from JD Motorsports to Ganassi, you know, just the way the car shifts in different gears, the gear ratio and it's going to be new. And obviously Matty D, you know, he's a fast learner. He's proved that. So I expect big things next year. Neff, want to talk some playoffs?
Sure, brother.
All right. So like I said earlier, wide open field, in my opinion. Obviously Kyle Busch has a pretty big gap, 15 points on second place. And then Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex, Kevin Harvick, and Joey Logano are separated by 2 points from second to fifth. And there's a little drop-off from Keselowski and then more of a drop-off to the rest of the field. And then, you know, you have Bowyer and Newman entering the playoffs as the last two seeds with no state playoff points at all and 45 points back. So, that's almost a full race right off the bat from the lead anyway. But, you know, the first round, let's get our first four out because, you know, the first round consists of Las Vegas this weekend, Richmond, a short track, and then the Roval. And we don't know what can happen at the Roval, as we saw last year. I'll just take it one by one. Newman comes in the 16 seed, Neff. Do you have him out or in?
I think Newman makes it to the next round.
Interesting. I don't. Like I said, he is a great points racer, as we both stated. But he's, what? He's only 4 points off of 12th right now. So that's not too bad.
And we see it every year that there's a handful of guys, four or five guys, in the first couple races that have a problem.
Right.
Blow an engine, you know, throw an oil cooler belt or whatever, that gives them just a horrible position. And they're playing catch-up from there for the rest of the round. And, you know, I forget the number that I've heard in the past, but I want to say it's like 14th, that if you can finish 14th in the first three races, you'll make it to the next round like 95% of the time.
Hmm.
I mean, Newman can finish 14th.
Right.
And I think that'll be it. I think you'll see, you know, a handful of guys like William Byron and Almirola maybe have an issue. And Bowyer. I know you're big on Bowyer making it. I still feel like Boyer is going to have one of those deals where something stupid happens at Vegas and he's freaking 25 or 30 points out. And he, you know, and he's pretty much done after that first race.
All right. So you have, I mean, that's our the next driver. So you have Boyer. I do have Boyer in. I think Boyer's going to be sneaking this playoffs. You look at the first round. He's a great short track racer. Almost won Richmond in the spring. Thought he could have won, but wasn't aggressive enough on Truex towards the end and ended up losing second place to Joey Logano. So you have Boyer out. I have him in. So that's 1-1. Eric Almirola is next, Neff. As I said earlier, you know, he got off to a pretty solid start this year. Had 6 top 10s at one point. But the past 2 months, the ship's kind of sailed, and I don't have the 10 team advancing.
I don't either. I mean, I just... Right now, I feel like of the teams at Stewart Haas, they are running the worst. And it hasn't even really been mistakes. It just seems like they are just not clicking. And you got to be clicking to making rounds in the playoffs. And unfortunately, I mean, I'm a huge Almirola fan, and I've expected him to do some great things, and I really expect him to do great things this year. And they started off pretty strong beginning of the year, but the last 10 or 12 weeks, it just seems like they've been lost. And I don't picture them finding it in the next 3 races.
Fair. And I think another driver that we'll agree on possibly, and you mentioned lost, is also Alex Bowman. He won Chicago. That was 2.5 months ago now, though. And he has only got 1 top 10 in the 9 or 10 races since then. I don't have Alex Bowman advancing enough. He did last year. He surprised some people, got to the round of 12. What do you say?
That's a tough call. I mean, I think he will be borderline. I think if he advances, he barely advances. But, it's kind of the anti-Newman. He runs really well and then doesn't get the finishes to show for it.
Right.
And I feel like if they can, you know, if he can stay out of his own trouble, I think he can advance. But I think coming out of this round, he'll be 12th or 11th in points if he's still in. So I'm gonna say he advances.
In. Got it. All right. So we don't agree on that one. So I got 3 guys out right now. You got 2. I'm going to give you my 4th right now, and then you can tell me your other 2. What about William Byron? He's shown a ton of speed in qualifying this year. Has like 10 or 11 front row starts. But then during the race, he just, you know, he's won a stage or he has a playoff point. But he hasn't, in my opinion, he usually he qualifies well, like I said, but then he doesn't race as good. So enters as a 13 seed. I think he's out after the Roval. I feel like the first couple tracks are going to challenge him a little bit. And he finished 37th in Las Vegas last year because of a wreck. But the Vegas race last year is insane. I think 7 playoff drivers had incidents. So what do you got with Byron?
I'm with you. I think when we come down to the end of the round, I think it's going to be between Bowman and Byron for who advances. And I'm going to pick that Bowman ends up ahead of Byron at the Roval enough to advance, and Byron ends up being the last guy out in the first round.
I would also put Bowman as probably the 13th driver after the Roval. And I think Byron's right there with him. So I got Newman, Byron, Bowman, and Almirola out. So far you have Byron, Almirola, and Boyer out. Neff, who's your last guy out in the first 4?
I hate to do it to him, but I'm going to say Eric Jones. And that will be shocking because I think Jones has got equipment and ability to make the final 8, if not the final 4. But I feel like they have issues either themselves or more likely getting caught up in somebody else's stuff. And I don't think he's a great road course racer. So I think when you're going to the Roval for a cutoff and you need a result, he'll push it and it'll end up costing him. I think Eric Jones will be the 4th one out.
That's interesting because I think he's arguably the hottest driver in NASCAR right now in terms of, you know, Hamlin's probably the hottest, but I would say Eric Jones.
I think Hamlin's awful.
Yeah, but I'd put Jones probably 2nd or 3rd. You know, he's got the win obviously at Darlington, but also a ton of top 5s recently. This past week might not have gone out play, you know, he wanted to with the wreck, but I don't know. I think Jones, it's hard to tell because there's, like I said, it's so close. Like, I want to say he gets to the round of 8, But he maybe championship four. Like last year, I picked him to go to championship four, and that didn't turn out well because he pressed hard in this round, won the pole for Vegas, but got involved in an accident with Harvick when Harvick blew a tire, and Jones finished last. So that, you know, that's not going to help you. The role for him last year was atrocious. That was a terrible mess. He would tell you that too. So I got Eric Jones moving on. I'm not sure about the round of eight, but definitely the round of 12. But now, let's get to our final four picks. Let's fast forward a little bit. Let's not break down the entire playoffs, and we'll keep it, you know, updating it throughout the playoffs because who knows? Sure. Maybe all of our guys will...
Yeah,
will,
all of ours will advance.
Yeah.
And Kyle Busch. Kozlowski, I'll be out of first round.
That's unlikely, but that would be crazy.
That would be
insane. It would also show, I think, the flaws of this format. But, let's go to the final four because, you know, Kyle Busch, as I said, enters with a 15-point lead. Kyle Busch going to Homestead?
I think he has to. Same. I mean, you're already 15 points up on everybody in every round, and he's going to add some more points as we go through these playoffs, even though I don't feel like they're clicking right now. I feel like they've been a bit off, but, I mean, he's Kyle Busch, and you'll end up seeing him. I still think he wins the Roval to advance to the next round no matter what. So that he's got to win at every track again. But he's arguably the best driver in the sport. And I can't imagine that he won't be running for another title.
I agree. That would be his fifth straight trip to the championship four race. He's finished first, second, third, and fourth in his first four tries. So let's see how he does this year. Neff, Denny Hamlin comes in as a two seed. As we said, he's probably the hottest driver in NASCAR. You could throw Harvick in there too. I would say Jones is probably the third best. Has Hamlin going to Homestead? Because the playoff track suit up well for Hamlin. I do have him going to Homestead. I think he's going to be a big threat this year.
I do too. I think he has turned his mental game around, and that has always been what held him back. He's had the talent. He's had the equipment. He's had the team. Now his mental game seems to be in order. And I think that was the one thing that prevented him from being a champion. And I am feeling pretty confident that he is going to ride this wave that he's on right now all the way to Homestead.
I agree. Like I said, the playoff track suited him well. And he kind of mentioned that mentality aspect because he has struggled with it. You know, think back to 2010, throwing the water bottle at Phoenix, you know, when he kind of blew the championship with Jimmy Johnson. And he mentioned that he needed to be a whole new
person. Yeah, and then went straight to Homestead and wrecked out.
On the first lap, pretty much, yeah. So, yeah, I think Hamlin's going to be a tough threat this year. A third JGR car, Martin Truex Jr., enters the playoffs as the third seed Neff. I don't like what I see out of the 19 team right now. It's been a lot of inconsistency, a ton of bad luck. I don't have Truex making it. What about you?
I'm with you. I feel like they've just lost something, and they have not been a factor for a while. And, again, that can change in a heartbeat, you know? I mean, he should have won the Roval last year. And the momentum off of that could carry him a long way if they manage to do it this year. You know, Colpern is a master strategist and keeps that team on an even keel, so they could turn it around. But right now, just what they've done the last month or so, I feel like they are not in a position to make the Final Four.
Agreed. And then Kevin Harvick, like I said, probably the hottest driver, arguably, behind Hamlin in NASCAR. Three wins in the past seven races. I have Harvick going to the Final Four.
I'm with you.
Fair. So there's we're three for three right now. And then my final guy might be different from yours. Not sure. But I got Joey Logano. He's battled pretty much all year with Kyle Busch for the regular season championship until the final couple races where Kyle got ahead. He's the defending champion. Last year, no one even knew Joey Logano would be in the championship four. No one thought he would be. And he proved everyone wrong. The big three and me, and the me being him, Joey Logano, was the champion at the end of the year. Who you got, Neff? Who's your fourth guy?
I really feel like a Penske driver will make it, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Kurt Busch makes it to the Final Four.
Interesting.
I feel like they've had the equipment, and they have just had some god-awful luck. And if they can avoid the bad luck and just do their thing, I think he'll be in the Final Four. They've changed it up a little bit over the years since the first chase in 2004 as far as track lineup. But Kurt Busch has always been very good in the 10 racetracks, or at the 10 racetracks in the playoffs. And I feel like that's going to be the same thing this year, that he's going to be in contention for most of the events. And I think it's just a matter of not having bad luck. You know he's going to give you 100% every lap, and that can get him in trouble sometimes. But if he can stay out of people's messes, not get hit in the fender by tire carriers on pit lane, I think he's got the talent and the team behind him to make it to the final four.
Quickly, who do you got winning the championship?
It's a coin flip. It's going to be Kyle Busch or Kevin Harvick. I'm going to go Kyle Busch. I think he gets his second one.
Yeah, he's probably the best driver in history to only have one championship. So that's going to be tough to beat. But I'm going with the guy to get his first. I'm going Denny Hamlin. I'm riding this 11 team this year. As we've said, the playoff track suit him well. He's always been good at Homestead. I think back to, was it 2013 when he was having a terrible year, got injured with the wreck with Logano at Fontana, missed the playoffs, but ended up getting a win at the last in the last race of the year. So I got Denny Hamlin getting the first championship of his career. Neff, any bold statements, any bold predictions? I'll give you mine for the playoffs. I think Clint Bowyer, he's going to make it through the first round, wins Talladega, and gets to the round of eight.
I think Kyle Larson is either going to be out in the first round or he's going to win the championship.
Interesting.
I'm that far. If he makes it out of the first round, I think he could grind it all the way to Homestead and win the championship. But he just constantly has lapses during races where he hits the wall and ends his days. And that's why I can't get on him to be a championship guy right now, because he keeps taking himself out of contention.
Yeah, perfect point this past weekend in Indianapolis. Yep. All right, now, so we got a triple header this weekend in Vegas. It's the final race in the round of eight for the Truck Series. I'm going with Grant Enfinger. He comes in on the bubble. I'm going to say the 98 goes to victory lane. He won this race last year, his last win in the series. Who you got?
Gosh, I didn't pull up my list right now. Who's in the 51 this weekend?
Christian Eckes.
That's who I picked the other day, so I'm going to stick with him. Christian Eckes is going to shock the world and win the truck race in the 51.
That would be something, but it is the 51, so you never know.
It's 51.
Right. So then we got the Xfinity Series on Saturday. All three of these races are run in the, I guess, in the East Coast would be at night. The West Coast would be late afternoon into the night there. Who you got winning the Xfinity Series race? Because you're probably going to have the big three running pretty well. No Cup Series drivers in the field.
I feel like Mike Harmon is going to try but fail.
Maybe he'll have some Applebee's.
Even with his new Applebee's connection. I'm going with my boy Allgaier. He's got to win a race at some point this year.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to go... you'd think Allgaier would have won by now, for sure. But it's been a full calendar year. I'm going Cole Custer, though. We had him on the podcast last week. He's obviously got six wins this year. I say he makes it a seventh, and you know he's going to really challenge those Stewart Haas Racing guys in the Cup Series, because Cole Custer's making some noise in the Xfinity level. Now we got the first race of the Cup playoffs, Neff. I feel like it's going to be a wild one, just like last year. The mile and a halfs have had incredible restarts this year. I think Sunday will be no different. Who you got getting to victory lane?
I think he's going to keep riding the momentum. I think Harvick's going to win again.
It's a good pick for sure. Harvick's going to be probably pretty hard to beat. Alex Bowman, I talked to him. I'm not picking him to win, but he thinks this is going to be a really turning point for him. It's similar track to Chicago. But I think it's going to be a Penske car. I think it's going to be Brad Keselowski. He won this race last year as well. He's been pretty quiet recently. He hasn't won in 4 months. So, two of his three wins this year have been on a mile and a half at Kansas and Atlanta, and also he obviously dominated Martinsville, leading 446 laps. So I got the two car getting back to victory lane, Neff.
But you also got him. You got to remember, Atlanta is super hard on tires, and Vegas is now super hard on tires, and I think that kind of plays to Keselowski's strong suit.
And he's won, I believe, three times at the track. I mean, it's one of his better tracks at the cup level. So I got Keselowski getting to victory lane. Neff, any final thoughts before we get to Kyle Larson?
It's going to be a great playoffs. I'm glad the trucks are finally back on track after 6 months. So looking forward to that. Although after this one, they don't race for like another 4 weeks,
Yeah, until Talladega.
Ridiculous.
So, yeah, it was funny because in the media center this week, Justin Haley, he was one of the Xfinity breakout guys, and I'd asked him about, you know, what's he learned this year and how he's gearing up for the playoffs, and he just brought up the Truck Series and how their playoffs started 3 months ago when they really started like a month ago. But still, I mean, it feels like three months
yeah.
For the first round. So, Neff, as I mentioned, we got Kyle Larson coming up on the show. You mentioned how it's kind of been feast or famine for him, and he says in the interview too that this has to be the year he gets to the championship race because it's the last year the championship race is at Homestead.
The Homestead, right?
So, what's your thoughts on Kyle Larson? You kind of just mentioned, but I think, like I said, it's so close, so it's hard to see, but he could definitely get to the final eight, final four too, potentially win the championship. But something freaky always happens in the playoffs, it seems, for the 42 team.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a huge Kyle Larson fan for, gosh, 10 years probably, watching him run in Mini Outlaws and in midgets before he was ever on anybody's radar. And he's just a phenomenal talent, and it's just a matter of keeping focused on these bigger races. I mean, that's the thing. When you're in sprint cars and you're in Xfinity and you're in trucks, you're running short races and you don't have to stay focused for extended periods. And in these cup races, focus always seems to bite him. And that's the one thing that worries me about him. If he can stay focused and not have a misstep on track, then I think he's got as good a shot as anybody at winning this title.
All right, Neff, let's get to my conversation with Kyle Larson. All right, so 2019 probably hasn't gone how you wanted to, at least at the beginning of the year. How would you gauge the season as a whole?
Yeah, well, the early in the season was, it feels like such a long time ago now, which is good because it felt like we were just stuck in a slump for forever. But lately it's been good. You know, it's been back to where I feel like we're competitive kind of every racetrack. And early on in the season, too, I mean, I felt good. You had issues with blown tires and mistakes on my part with crashes and things. And, we could never get a rhythm or momentum going. But now the last, 2 months, 2.5 months, I feel like we've been gelling good and getting good finishes.
Was it just at the beginning that you're kind of beating yourselves?
Some races, yeah, for sure. But then there was also other races, where we'd be inside the top 10 and below a tire. So, definitely there's a handful of races where I felt like we've shot ourselves in the foot, and then there's also been a handful of races where I just feel like it didn't work out, but like I said, lately it's been good.
I know a lot of people don't talk about the package, probably you as well, but a lot of people thought that coming into the year that it probably affects you more than a lot of others. So did that lead into any of the struggles?
No, I mean, I don't think so. Like, I feel like I'm versatile enough that it doesn't take me long to get used to any package. So, I heard it and read it and I guess when you struggle a little bit in the early season, you're like, well, maybe I just don't suit this package. But I feel like, I race so many different types of cars that it's just another race car. And obviously, I would want low downforce and high horsepower, but I don't think we'll ever have that. So even if you aren't good at something, you got to work hard to get better at it. And I'm sure my driving style has changed throughout the year to get, figure out how to be fast, but it's just another race car. So it honestly doesn't drive crazy different than, like an Xfinity car. And I was always really good in Xfinity, so I think just people assume stuff.
When you're going through a downtime, not just a NASCAR, I guess any form of racing, what's that do to a driver's mentality?
I think the mental kind of aspect of racing or any sport is could be the most important, you know, thing. And yeah, I mean, when you're winning and running up front, you know, your confidence is high and your belief that you can win is there. So it makes running well a little easier. You know, when you get into a slump and you're not running as good and your confidence gets down, you're not believing in yourself and your team. It's hard to talk yourself into going out there and running hard. So the good thing with me is that, you know, I race so often that it seems like when I get in on a little hot streak, I can carry it, you know, for what feels like pretty long for me, because you know, I'm racing midweek and usually, you know, in the dirt stuff I'm doing good, and then you know, we'll get some good tracks, or, you know, I'll start thinking, you know, like looking ahead at the schedule of, you know, all right, I know I can do good here. And so yeah, it definitely helps when you're running good. But yeah, when you run bad, it's easy to get down for sure.
Got it. Now, obviously, Kurt's new to the team this year. What's your relationship grown with him, or how's it grown with him on and off the track throughout the year?
Yeah, I mean, Kurt's been a lot of fun to work with. He's extremely smart, you know, when it comes to the car and what he feels. You know, it's amazing, you know, how he can feel everything, and you know, down to like the most smallest thing, you know, he can feel it. And I feel like he's always correct too with his, you know, communication on what adjustments he needs. So that's been cool to, you know, sit in the lounge and listen to how he communicates. And I feel like I've tried to work harder at paying attention to what I feel rather than just trying to chase grip and chase lap time. So I think there's weekends where I've you know, done a good job of, you know, from when, you know, I listen to Kurt, you know, putting that into, you know, kind of how I communicate with the 42 team. So, yeah, it's been really cool to work with him. He's, gosh, you know, he's a past champion. So anytime you get the chance to work with a champion, you need to take advantage of what they can teach you. So I've enjoyed it. And, you know, he's pushed the whole organization to be better and do better jobs. So I think that's always good.
So off that, yeah, it seems like, you know, any team he goes to, he betters. How do you feel like he's bettered Chip Ganassi Racing?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think it just, you know, with the communication that he brings to the lounge, at least, you know, the stuff that I can see, mm-hmm. you know, his communication with his team, and then you know, we share a trailer with, you know, share an office in the 42 trailer with both teams. And yeah, so I, you know, when he's talking to his team, you know, you can see my guys listening and taking notice of what he's saying, because, you know, our cars are usually, for the most part, set up somewhat similar. So, you know, if I'm getting like kind of confused on something of how I'm trying to explain something, you know, he can kind of help and make that curve you know, a little easier. So yeah, it's incredible. I think, you know, both of the Bush brothers, I think, are really good when it comes to communicating with their teams. And that's just something that, yeah, I feel like I haven't done a great job with, maybe. So trying to get better at that and having Kurt around really helps.
So the playoffs are about to start. It seems like every year something freaky happens to you in the playoffs, whether it's Kansas a few years ago or whatever. How do you feel like the tracks suit up for you for the next 10 weeks?
Yeah, it's I think, you know, last year was the first year where nothing's really kind of happened. We just got eliminated because we weren't good enough. But it's pretty crazy, you know, those couple years where, you know, I had bad luck in the playoffs, especially 2017, you know, because I felt like we had a chance to go all the way. But you know, it's tough. You know, you got to be fast, but you got to have good luck and execute right and just finish as high as you possibly can every race. But I look forward to the playoffs. You know, I always feel like there's some good tracks for us. You know, the third round would be the track, or the round where I feel like it doesn't suit me as well, you know, because Martinsville's in there, obviously. And by that point in the playoffs, you to make it in the Final Four, you either got to win or you got to be top five. It seems like every race, and Martinsville is somewhere where I haven't ever ran top five, so or I think once, but yeah, it's just tough. But yeah, you just got to be on your game, and the intensity in the playoffs is ramped up, and it's fun as a competitor.
So a couple more for you. Because the 42 team seems like it's, I don't know if you'd say peaking, because you haven't won yet, but, you know, running better, would you consider yourself a dark horse to get to Homestead? Even though you said, you know, the third round is a little worrisome.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I look at how we've been running the last couple months, and, you know, I feel like we're anywhere from the best car to the sixth best car kind of most weekends. So if you can carry that through for the next, you know, 10 weeks or 11 weeks, yeah, I mean, I could see us making it to Homestead, you know, and I feel like we're very close to winning a race too. So, you know, hopefully that comes, you know, soon, and we can get some even, you know, better momentum going. But yeah, I mean, this is the year I have to make it to the Final Four, because we don't go to Homestead. We don't go to Homestead next year. So this will be my best shot to win a championship.
And obviously, you know, the goal is to win the championship. But so is anything less than winning a championship disappointing in your eyes?
I mean, for my career?
Yeah, or does winning races matter even maybe more so?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I want to win races and championships and all that, you know, because – you know, I'd like to have a Hall of Fame career, and I feel like to be in the Hall of Fame, you need to be, you know, winning lots of races and in a championship or two. So, you know, we're obviously not to that, or I haven't been to that point yet. But no, I mean, yeah, I'm still young too, and I still feel like I've got a long career ahead of me, and hopefully those wins come. But you know, at least for me, I know if I don't have, you know, great success, I guess, in NASCAR or whatever, I can always look to my future of, you know, when I'm on racing with the World of Outlaws or something, however long, you know, down the road that is. I know I can go there and win races on the regular and win championships and things like that. And so I just want to be a successful race car driver. I don't really care about being just successful in one form. You know, I want to be successful in every type of race car and every series that I run in.
Makes sense. So I'll get you out of here on this one. I took a fan question from @GoDucks_Mick. He wants to know, how much of a factor is aero in a wing sprint car?
It's a lot. It's, yeah, I mean, for sure. It's very similar to a cup car, you know. You know, wing sprint car, you know, the top wing is so big and it's so much higher off the ground than you know, what we're used to in a cup car. So yeah, I mean, it the way you try and find clean air is, you know, very similar too, you know, in like a stock car. Just kind of try and picture it as you trying to get your left headlight, you know, out inside of somebody to get, you know, fresh air, or when you're on the right side, you know, you got to get out wider than the car in front of you. Where sprint car is the same thing, you know, you got to get, Knoxville would probably be the most aero sensitive track, and you know, there you got to always make sure your left sideboard on your wing is kind of poked out and getting clean air off the guy in front of you to help give you that downforce. So yeah, I think that's also, you know, that's why, you know, I feel like racing dirt, but racing wing sprint cars especially, can help me. You're racing a NASCAR. I know it's they're two totally different cars, but you're still worried about dirty air in the same way, if not the same exact way. So it's very important, and especially when you get on those half mile tracks, the flatter ones, that's when you really need to start, you know, thinking about, you know, the dirty air and how you're positioning yourself behind the guy in front of you.
Cool, man. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Really good conversation there with Kyle Larson. I learned a ton, and even though I followed dirt racing much of my life, you know, grew up going to the dirt tracks with my family, I was really surprised to hear how much clean air actually matters in dirt racing, specifically the wing sprint car. As always, fun time chatting with Neff, discussing all things Indianapolis, as well as we previewed the playoffs. It's interesting that we both have the same Final Four going to Homestead. But again, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Church Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as it helps us out tremendously. Until next week's show, where we review the first race of the 2019 Cup Series playoffs at Las Vegas, we out.